Yeah, and then you start to understand what a transplant actually entails. I really regretted wishing for that. It's in no way affixed to anything CHD related. It's basically like one of my cardiologists used to tell me that you're basically trading one set of circumstances for another set of circumstances, but luckily, this set of issues may extend your life for some years to come.
Welcome to Heart with Anna. I am Anna Jaworski and the host of your program. This is the last episode of season 14. Today's episode is called Getting to Know Keith Flynn, a Heart Transplant Hopeful. Keith Flynn was born in 1975, and shortly after birth, he was diagnosed with ventricular septal defect, double inlet left ventricle, pulmonary atresia, and hypoplastic right ventricle. He had two Lalactosic shunts at age 6 months and 5 years, and a modified Fontan procedure when he was 15 years old. Despite experiencing atrial arrhythmias in early adulthood, Keith received limited cardiac care in his 20s and 30s. In his 30s, Keith started experiencing syncopal or fainting episodes, and on one occasion, he was rescued by his wife after fainting while swimming. As a result of these episodes, Keith received a pacemaker and recording device, and was treated with sotalol, a beta blocker. However, Keith had also begun to experience fluid retention related to heart failure, and doctors told him that he would need a heart and liver transplant. He is currently undergoing the required testing to be listed for both organs. Over the years, Keith worked for a variety of retail and restaurant businesses before working his way up to managing and owning businesses. He also started doing stand-up comedy. Most recently, he has worked in the health and disability rights fields and earned his bachelor's degree in accounting. He met his wife in 2003 and currently lives in Baltimore. Welcome to Heart with Anna, Keith.
Hi, Anna. Thanks for having me on. I'm excited to be here.
Well, I'm excited to not only have you today, but to know that I'm going to be getting to know you better over the next several months.
Yeah, that sounds great. I'm looking forward to it.
Well, let's get right into it. I know you had a single ventricle heart and the Fontan procedure. It sounds like you've had a lot of ablations to try to get rid of your arrhythmias. Are you currently in heart failure?
Yes, I am. I guess the realization of heart failure came in 2004 when I passed out while taking the trash out.
Ooh.
No one likes taking the trash out, but I don't suggest trying to get out of it that way.
I agree with you.
Yeah. My then girlfriend and now wife, Susie, demanded that we go to the emergency room. Yeah. So we were living in Tallahassee, Florida at the time. Mm-hmm. And we were both kind of new to the area, so we hadn't had any cardiologist contact. Mm. So they had no idea what to do with me when I arrived at the ER, and they couldn't really understand my history.
Oh.
I thought the Fontan at that point was a fix. So we didn't really know if it was my heart, but they did decide that I had a kind of weird heart rhythm. So they just threw me in the ICU and treated me like I had a heart attack.
Yikes. I lived in Panama City Beach for 2 years while my husband was in graduate school. And I did a bunch of research and did not feel like Tallahassee was really able to care for my son. And so we went to Pensacola to get care.
Yeah, I definitely agree. I don't think Tallahassee would have anything for CHD management there.
Yeah.
For sure. Or at least not when I was there.
Right. And what year were you there?
I was there in 2003.
We were in Panama City Beach in 1998 to 2000. And I just didn't feel like they could handle my kid. So we drove to Pensacola, which was quite a distance. So you're in Tallahassee, you're at a hospital that you know is not the right hospital for you. They're treating you like you're an acquired heart patient and you know you're not. So what happened?
Well, after several days of being in the ICU, we were getting kind of impatient. So
sure.
I threatened to leave. And finally, a cardiologist did come in to see me. Basically, she came in and said, quote, your ejection fraction is very low. It's around 25%, close quote. She turned around and walked out of the room.
Oh, my gosh. She walked out after she just dropped that bomb on you?
Yeah, she didn't give us
Oh
an
my
explanation of the
gosh.
issue or anything.
Oh my gosh. So what did you do?
Well, we just kind of looked at each other, my wife and I. We had no idea what we were in for.
Right.
Finally, we were able to get a referral to Shands, which is
Okay.
the University of Florida,
Sure.
Gainesville. And then we saw Dr. Arwa
I've met
Saidi. And
her. She's
yes,
amazing.
she's wonderful.
Yeah.
She is. She really is.
Okay, now did they take you by ambulance or did you? Please tell me you didn't drive yourself there.
No, they actually let me leave the hospital. So they released me. And then it was, I don't remember the exact time period, but it was some time before we got an appointment there. And then we went
Oh my
to Shands
goodness.
whenever we got the appointment.
Oh my goodness. So they didn't airlift you there. They didn't send you by ambulance. They just let you go home.
Yeah, exactly.
Wow.
It was a situation where I lost consciousness. It wasn't happening every day. So I guess they figured we should just take our chances and go to Shands whenever we got the appointment. So the weird thing is the only person who kind of knew what was going on was one of the ICU nurses. And she looked at me and she said, "Well, I think you might have to go to UF and they write you up for a heart transplant."
Oh
And that
my
was just kind of,
gosh, she said that with just
yes.
the limited information that she had. Wow, she was intuitive.
She was. And she
Wow.
actually was the only person who was correct in that hospital the whole time.
Oh Well, you guys are amazing. I'm so glad you had your wife by your side, though, because imagine how scary that would have been if you would have been there by yourself.
Oh, yes, she's wonderful. Absolutely.
I want to meet her already. She sounds amazing. Okay, well, let's backtrack just a bit and let's talk about your youth. I know you've had multiple heart procedures because you had two Blaylock-Taussig shunts, you had your Fontan, you've had ablation, so your poor heart's been touched a lot. But I'm wondering what your health was like as a kid. Were you able to run and play like your peers?
No, that's the short answer.
Okay.
In those days, things were a little different. In schools, if you had a disability or were unable to do what other kids did, you were just kind of excluded from the
Yeah.
activities. So, for instance, I never attended a PE class or physical education class in school.
Wow.
So my doctor who followed me in my childhood and my youth was very cautious of me doing any organized sports. And I think my parents kind of took that as a no sports mandate. So what I did do, though, I did, kind of hook up with some friends in my neighborhood, rode my bike a lot with them, and played a lot. So the only time I was really unable to keep up with them is when we were doing some extreme physical exertion, like running or racing on our bikes or anything like that.
Right.
Aside from that, I was able to keep up pretty well.
Do you have any sisters or brothers?
I do. I have an older sister and an older brother.
So, were you able to keep up with them?
We didn't play a lot together, I guess you would say. We didn't do a lot of activities together because they were older. So it was mainly my friends.
Okay, so then we fast forward. You're in your 20s, you're in your 30s, you're thinking you're fixed because that's what people thought back then. How were you feeling at that time?
So, yes, you're correct. That's the way the doctors framed it back then, was the Fontan procedure was a fix.
Right.
Kind of in my 20s and 30s, I didn't realize how lucky I was. I really felt well after the surgery. So I kind of tried to outwork everyone that I was around.
Oh no.
Yeah, I thought that was a kind of a way to prove that my heart had no bearing on what I could do.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I still didn't have that great of an exercise capacity. But I didn't go to cardiologists except for once a year. And that was kind of due to no health insurance and also kind of due to me not wanting to be around a cardiologist. But I did have to go to one who was a adult cardiologist. He really had no CHD experience, but I went to him to kind of keep my Lasix and my Ramipril prescriptions up to date.
Okay. So, did you have any idea that one day you would be needing a heart and liver transplant?
Well, I honestly thought that if I needed anything in the future, that it would be a valve replacement because I have one valve that's always had a leak in it my whole life. The funny thing is, I used to wish that I would get a heart transplant because I used to think, oh, just go in, get the heart changed, and you're good to go.
Oh,
And then,
wow.
yeah, and then you start to understand what a transplant actually entails. I really regretted wishing for that. It's in no way a fix to anything CHD related. It's basically like one of my cardiologists used to tell me that you're basically trading one set of circumstances for another set of circumstances, but luckily, this set of issues may extend your life for some years to come.
Texas Heart Institute were offering us a mechanical heart, and he said, no, Dad, I've had enough. Give it to someone who's worthy.
My father promised me a golden dress to twirl in. He held my hand and asked me where I wanted to go.
Whatever strife or conflict that we experienced in our long career together was always healed by humor.
Heart to Heart with Michael. Please join us every Thursday at noon Eastern as we talk with people from around the world who have experienced those most difficult moments.
Tonight Forever by the Baby Blue Sound Collective.
I think what I love so much about this CD is that some of the songs were inspired by the patients.
Many listeners will understand many of the different songs and what they've been inspired by. Our new album will be available on iTunes, Amazon.com, Spotify.
I love the fact that the proceeds from this CD are actually going to help those with congenital heart defects.
Enjoy the music.
Home Tonight Forever.
You are listening to Heart with Anna. If you have a question or comment that you would like addressed on our show, please send an email to Anna Jaworski at anna@hearttoheartwithanna.com. That's anna@hearttoheartwithanna.com. Now, back to Heart with Anna.
Before the break, we were getting to know Keith a little bit better. Keith, in this segment, let's talk about your experiences with arrhythmias. It sounds like once you hit your 30s, you started to have a lot more episodes of fainting or syncope. Can you tell us if there were certain activities that would bring that about?
I really wish I could tell you there were, Anna, but honestly, I passed out in so many different scenarios. One time it was walking or swimming or sitting down or watching TV or even lying on the bed. Mm-hmm. I almost feel like I could write a Dr. Seuss type book about the ways to pass out.
Oh, no.
Each time after the episode, we would check my blood sugar, check my blood pressure, pulse, oxygen saturation. All that seemed pretty much in range, nothing suspicious. And I always thought it was kind of funny because I could feel it coming on when I was about to pass out. I would hear like a train horn almost.
Oh,
and
wow.
Right before I would pass out. Yeah. And I was always able to say a little something right before I would lose consciousness. Like a couple of times I told my wife things like, oh, dial 911. And then I would pass out.
Or, oh, wow.
I don't feel so well. And then I would just lose consciousness.
That's interesting that you actually have an auditory sensation before you pass out.
Yeah, it was a little weird. And we went through all kinds of scenarios with my doctors. I even went as far as to stop doing my vice, which was drinking diet soda for over a year. Nothing worked that we changed, diet or anything. So finally, after a couple of ablations, a pacemaker implant, and a lot of medication adjustments, it's been years since an episode. So
well, that's good.
Apparently they figured out something. Yeah.
All right. Well, I was hoping after the pacemaker that the episodes would have stopped.
It helped. Yeah, I actually had two pacemakers. I had one implanted, and then and it was actually, I think, the addition of the Sotalol that actually helped with the passing out. Yeah. Once they got that adjusted correctly, I think that was what we needed.
Wow. Because you're just complicated, Keith. It's not going to be an easy fix for you. I mean, and you're not fixed. You know that now, but
right.
Back then you didn't know that. Okay. Well, since you had a single ventricle heart, was there any difficulty in inserting the pacemaker?
Yes, there was. Dr. Randall Bryant, he's in Jacksonville. I'm not sure if you know him. He's an electrophysiologist. Mm-hmm. He performed my ablations and installed my pacemaker. He told me before I went in for the ablation, he said, look, if we can't get this stopped with the ablation, I'm going to wake you up and ask you if I can put a pacemaker in there. And then I'll need your permission to do that. And I'm like, yeah, that's fine. So I remember getting shaken awake and him leaning over and explaining to me that I needed a pacemaker and was that okay? And I nodded yes. And then seconds later, I was back to sleep and waking up in the recovery room with a pacemaker installed.
Wow.
He was only able to install the atrial lead at that time, though. Mm. He said that if we ever needed to install the ventricular lead, that it would require a very invasive procedure. So
right.
Luckily, it hasn't come to that yet.
Okay, so they were able to install the pacemaker minimally invasively. They didn't actually have to do an open heart procedure?
That's correct. He did it in the catheterization lab.
Oh, wow. That's amazing. Yeah. I'm pleased to hear that they were able to do it in a cath lab for you, even though only the atria. It doesn't sound like they were able to do both the atria and the ventricle. So do you think that that's why you're also having to have the Sotalol as well?
It could be. And actually, a couple of years ago, they took me off of Sotalol and switched me to Tecosin because the Sotalol was no longer working.
Mm.
So that's what I'm on right now.
And that seems to be working okay.
It's working better. I'm still basically paced all the time, about 95% of the time.
Wow.
So, yeah.
Wow. Okay. So it's really, really scary when nothing seems to solve a medical problem and your arrhythmias couldn't be solved with the ablations, the cardioversions, the medications, the pacemaker. Nothing seems to really help you from going into heart failure. So tell us what it's like for you to have one problem after another without having a definitive fix.
Yeah, that's a great question, Anna. I never really thought about it that way, though. I'm a very positive person. I like to think what I've gone through in my life will somehow contribute to someone else receiving better care down the road. And since I've had issues all my life, if I can go 3 months without having a visit to the doctor, which hasn't happened in years, that's kind of like a vacation to me, honestly.
I bet it is. Yeah.
Yeah. So I guess I always have in my mind that the next thing, you know, whatever procedure it is, if it's a transplant, an ablation, whatever it is, if it'll give me a better quality of life than I have now, and if that's possible to maintain for years to come, then it's worth it.
Mm-hmm.
I'm really secure in my faith, and I've realized that my life is not my life. It's to be lived to help others out and make them laugh when I can, you know?
I just love that. That's so awesome.
Thank you. If God grants me more time to do that, I'm grateful. It's just the way I see it.
So you just roll with the punches.
I mean, that's all I can do, really.
Right, right.
You know, if I kind of bog myself down with, oh, they can't do anything to fix this, then I'm just going to walk around depressed all the time.
Right. But you know, Keith, there are people that that happens to.
Yeah, I hate to see that. It's very sad.
So you would say that your sense of humor and your faith are what are helping to carry you on?
Definitely. Yes.
And it sounds like you have a wife who is a great support system for you as well.
Absolutely. Absolutely. She has always been there for me. We are going on 11 years of marriage this year, and she just helps me more and more every day.
Hi, my name is Jamie Alcroft, and I just published my new book, The Tin Man Diaries. It's an amazing story of my sudden change of heart as I went through a heart and liver transplant. I can think of no better way to read the Tin Man Diaries than to cuddle up in your favorite Hearts Unite the Globe sweatshirt and your favorite hot beverage, of course, in your Hearts Unite the Globe mug, both of which are available at the HUG Podcast Network online store, or visit heartsunitetheglobe.org.
Heart to Heart with Anna is a presentation of Hearts Unite the Globe and is part of the HUG Podcast Network. Hearts Unite the Globe is a nonprofit organization devoted to providing resources to the congenital heart defect community to uplift, empower, and enrich the lives of our community members. If you would like access to free resources pertaining to the CHD community, please visit our website at www.congenitalheartdefects.com for information about CHD, the hospitals that treat children with CHD, summer camps for CHD survivors, and much
more. Before the break, we were talking with Keith about experiencing multiple problems with his heart that have resulted in him having to be listed for a heart and liver transplant. Keith, let's start this segment by having you talk to us about what it's like to have to be listed for a transplant, because I know it's quite an involved process. Can you walk us through it?
Sure, I'll be glad to. I think for each person, it's different. So I'll kind of go through what I've been through. I'm not sure if you're familiar with the TV show The Resident.
I'm not.
Yeah, so sometimes I'll watch that show and I'll see someone come in at the beginning of the episode. They don't know what's wrong with them and they find out, oh, you need a heart transplant. And by the end of that hour, they're walking out of the hospital like nothing ever happened to them.
Oh, wow.
So what, if you've ever seen that, it's nothing like that.
No, I'm glad I haven't seen that because I would be picking holes in the whole program the whole time.
It's a really good program to pick holes in. I'll put it that way.
Okay. Okay. So tell us what it's really like, Keith. You've got the skinny on this.
I've actually been through the testing process twice. I did it once in Florida, and then when I moved to Pennsylvania, I had to redo it.
Oh, wow.
I've been through it twice, and it always starts out with a huge blood test. For instance, Penn took 22 vials of blood from me at one time.
Oh, my gosh. You felt like a pincushion when you were done.
Oh, absolutely. We were sitting there counting as they went through. It was kind of
fun. Wow, 22 vials. Wow. Okay.
Yeah, I think they do every test possible with your blood. And then you're going to have simple procedures like x-rays of the chest. Mm-hmm. And then there's going to be heart catheterizations, MRIs with contrast, bone density scans, lung capacity testing, stress test, just innumerable doctor's appointments, meetings with specialists and surgeons. And
did both of the hospitals agree that you needed a heart and a liver? Because we didn't even talk about that, why you needed two organs.
After the Fontan, the pressures increase that the heart puts out. This increases the blood flow into the liver. So with these increased pressures, it puts extra work on the liver, and your liver can become cirrhotic.
Mm-hmm.
And when I was at the University of Florida in around 2008, they did do a liver biopsy. I had fibrosis, but not cirrhosis yet.
Okay.
And that is a long process to get cirrhosis. So in Florida, they didn't even talk about a possible liver transplant because, as you know, a liver can repair itself if mm-hmm. the body's pretty healthy.
Right. And I've heard of people who have said that when they get the new heart, that the liver does come back. It bounces back.
Exactly. At Penn, they've prepared me for a heart and a liver transplant. So what they'll do is when I'm in the OR, they'll go ahead and do the heart transplant. They have to visually inspect the liver to see if I need that.
Mm-hmm.
Chances are they have a feeling that I absolutely will, but there's always a chance that they can see that it's not that bad and they'll feel it will repair itself.
Mm-hmm.
But they say they have the greatest success rate post-Fontan with a heart and liver transplant.
Yeah, and I just read a study where they were able to look at patients who had just the heart and the heart and the liver. It was a very small group, I'm sure you can imagine.
Sure.
Thankfully, there aren't thousands or hundreds of thousands of people having these procedures, so it was very, very small. But in the small cohort that was looked at, the people who got the heart and the liver did seem to recover faster and better. What is a typical day like for you while you're waiting for a heart?
So honestly, I try to keep it as normal as I possibly can. A doctor explained to me once that if a person who did not have a CHD was in the heart failure that I was in, that they probably wouldn't be able to get out of bed. But because our bodies adjust so well to different situations, that we're able to wait outside of the hospital. So since I don't have to wait in the hospital, I actually still work full time.
Wow.
So I work for a nonprofit organization called Disability Rights Maryland, and they help Maryland residents with disabilities obtain access to needed services. So basically, anyone with a disability in Maryland who is entitled to services and is having a difficult time getting them, they can call us and maybe we can help them out. All our services are free.
Wow.
It's nice to work somewhere that actually makes a noticeable difference in others' lives.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So after work, it's kind of up in the air because, as you know, with your son, some days we have energy, some days we really don't. So after work, I could still make it to the gym maybe. If not, I may just be laying on the couch watching TV. And quite honestly, some months are different than others, because a couple of months ago, I was basically coming home, laying on the couch. I went to see my cardiologist, and my wife's like, yeah, he's not doing as much as he used to. And they figured out they needed to give me more diuretics. So they did that, and I dropped some weight. I was good to go.
Well, and that's one of the problems when you're in heart failure, is that you can, unbeknownst to yourself, because it happens, like you were saying, so gradually, but you can put on 10 or 20 pounds of fluid, and it's just in all your cells all over your body, and you don't realize it. But that's like carrying around a baby.
Right, exactly. Well, I wouldn't know about that, but...
Well, yeah. But I mean, 10 or 20 pounds, that's a baby.
Some days I look like I'm carrying around a baby.
I rather doubt that, Keith, but... But I have had friends who go into congestive heart failure, and yeah, they say their abdomens get quite distended, and that's how they know there's a problem, because all of a sudden there's all this fluid in their abdomen that they know shouldn't be there, because it's not like they had 5 Big Macs or anything like that.
Exactly.
It's just the fluid that builds up. Well, it's really scary to know that you could get that fluid build up and not even know it. It's good that your wife is aware and she's watching you and she's kind of keeping track of what's going on with you so she can report to your doctor, because I think that things do happen so gradually to you, you know, to other heart warriors, that you're just plugging away. You're just trying to make it step by step, and you may not realize how much you're slowing down.
Right. A funny story to speak to that is, my wife was actually working in Massachusetts, and I was at our house in Tampa when we lived in Florida.
Mm-hmm.
And I had got to the point where I was struggling to get out of bed in the morning, and I just couldn't understand why I couldn't lose weight. And I actually went to the doctor before we made a move to see my cardiologist, and she put me in the hospital. She walks in and she's like, "What is going on with you?" And I had accumulated fluid, so gradually I didn't realize it. I just thought I was tired from packing for the move.
Oh,
and yeah,
wow.
It definitely happened that way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, I have friends who tell me that one of the ways that they know that there's a problem is they can't sleep flat on their back, that they have to sleep sitting up. And that's one of the ways that they know that they're accumulating fluid. So there's all these subtle ways. Like you were saying before, every person presents a little bit differently. So there may be some common signs, but we know that every person is unique, and especially you heart warriors who have had different kinds of surgeries and have unique anatomies. And so even though you may have certain signs that are the same as everybody else, the way it presents in you may be a little bit different than in somebody else.
Right, right.
Well, I am so impressed with your Facebook page and how open and honest you're being. And you told my producer, David Franca, that you'd be willing to talk with us at intervals to help people understand what it's like to be living in heart failure and what it's like to know that you need a transplant. Why did you decide to go public with this?
Well, I realized a few years ago when I was working in Florida, I was working with individuals with disabilities. And so I was around a lot of people who understood certain disabilities, but no one seemed to know what CHD was.
Mm.
And I was like, how can so many people be affected by this? And most of the people who work in this industry have no idea what it is.
Yeah.
I really noticed that there needs to be some education and some public awareness about it.
Right.
Someone with CHD can have what some people refer to as an invisible disability. So if they have their shirt on, and someone walks by you, they're never going to know that anything is wrong with you.
Right.
We have to speak out to let people know what's going on and how it affects us, affects our families, and affects the workplace. That's kind of the reasons behind it. Just kind of making sure that I can do my part to let people know more about CHD and raise awareness for it.
I think it's fabulous. Thanks so much for coming on the program today, Keith, and for sharing your experiences with us. I'm looking forward to catching up with you in another month or so.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me on today, Anna. I had a great time. Looking forward to doing it again soon.
Okay, that sounds good to me. Friends, I can't believe it. This concludes season 14 of Heart to Heart with Anna. Thanks for listening today. If you enjoyed listening to this episode, please consider becoming a patron. Just go to www.patreon.com/hearttoheart and pledge a monthly amount to support our program. For just the cost of a pizza, you could support us for an entire year. And I hope you all will still tune in November and December. We'll be having some encore presentations while I take a little break and get some work done on some books that I'm working on. And we'll be back in January of 2020 with a brand new program. We'll find out how Keith is doing. I hope you all have happy holidays, and remember, my friends, you are not alone.
Thank you again for joining us this week. We hope you have been inspired and empowered to become an advocate for the congenital heart defect community. Heart to Heart with Anna, with your host Anna Jaworski, can be heard every Tuesday at 12 noon Eastern Time.